Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, that's pound 529, from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross here at Circus Sports Fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. He is our GM, Michael Lombardi, back in the East Coast in New Jersey. I know you're getting ready to get on the road this week, Michael, but it is a lot of people and players that are on the road now because the trade deadline has finally come and gone. So this is it. Whatever you got yesterday at the deadline, you now have your roster going forward. Just before we get to the specific players, Michael, your overall takeaway, was it what you expected that it wasn't, you know, the biggest moving day in the NFL? Is it kind of what you thought it would be?
It never is in the NFL because it's too hard to acquire really good players, and you don't want to give up on good players. And you, unless teams are willing, everybody's trying to get something for free, like anything, right? Everybody wants the free buffet line. And so that's the biggest issue here, and you can't get that. And so, you know, basically what you're selling off is guys that could be potential free agents at the end of the year, and you've got to make sure that you get enough back that it doesn't offset the compensatory, right? So I think, to me, it's very challenging. And I think the media and the fans have expectations like it's baseball.
Right.
Well, it's not baseball. You know, football's a little challenging. It's harder. Plus, when you take a player, it's harder to get him ready to play this soon. And are you really going to allow yourself? Za'Darius Smith can come in and play right away for Detroit. Just put his hand in the dirt, say, okay, you're rushing. Here's what we're doing with you. But some of these other ones are a little bit more challenging. Mingo, who went to your Cowboys, Dave, I mean, he's got to learn a whole new offense. When do you think he's going to be ready? You know, it's difficult. Joe Burrow had a great say. He said, look, I'll just tell Herbert what to do in the huddle. Okay, well, that's good. But he really don't know what to do when the play breaks down.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up because you and I were wrapping up the Lombardi Line yesterday with our producer, Elliot, and all of a sudden we go on the text machine and go, yeah. Cowboys just got Jonathan Mingo right as we were getting off the air yesterday, and it was for a it's going to be for a fourth-round pick here in exchange for Mingo going from Carolina to Dallas. And I look at that move and I go, what does that do for Dallas? And I know Jerry's trying to toe the line of kind of like, we're going to make a move here. I hope it's not a move to make a move. And also on the news that Dak Prescott might and more than likely could be going to the IR. So he's going to miss significant time. What do you make of that move for Dallas? Does it do anything to really help out the Cowboys? If not this year, could it be a good addition long term?
The Cowboys have always been an organization that have looked to what they graded the player in college. Mm. And if that player becomes available, they go back to their college reports, regardless of what's happened in pro, and still have that interest in the player. That's how they operate. That's how Trey Lance ended up in Dallas. They loved him coming out, had a high grade on him. Their scouting department thought he was going to be a really good player like the 49ers did. And they decided to, for a fourth-round pick, it was a worthy investment. I think this is the same thing with Mingo. I think they really liked Mingo coming out in the draft. They would have drafted him. They didn't get him. And they feel like, okay, now we've got two more years to really see if we're right on this grade. And we're only giving up a fourth-round pick. I've always been of the opposite belief. Mm. Like, I've always said, okay, whatever we graded him in college, it doesn't matter anymore. We got to watch him on pro tape. The pro grade is more important than the college grade. That's not how they think sometimes in Dallas. If they have a belief of a guy, they liked him, and they go with it. Now, you know, sometimes that could work out. You know, we've all done that. We've all said, hey, I really like this guy. He's in the wrong situation. He just doesn't really fit. But when you take a receiver from the Carolina Panthers who have no receivers, it makes you a little worried, right?
Absolutely. And I kind of go to your system of regrading, if you will. Once you get in the NFL, you've got a body of work. You've got tape to watch on Mingo. Is it still worthy of a fourth-round pick? That's the brain trust in Dallas said yes. We'll find out if Will Clay and Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones are right here. But I'm kind of with you. It seemed a little bit steep. I conversely look at what the Commanders did in getting Marshon Lattimore yesterday out of New Orleans. This is a four-time Pro Bowler, of course. And they're going to swap some picks in this deal, but essentially they're going to give up a third, a fourth, and a sixth-round pick in next year's draft to get Lattimore and a 2025th fifth-round pick from New Orleans. That feels like a significant move to me. And I look at the Commanders now, plus $1.15 to win the East. The Eagles are the odds-on favorites at $1.40. How much does this change what the Commanders and Dan Quinn are trying to do this year, not just in future years?
Well, I think the trade for Lattimore has more than just this year. I think they feel like, look, they gave up some draft picks, some draft capital, something that they feel like, okay, you know, they really don't want to do it, but they did. And they take, you know, they take in a player who they feel can be a legitimate cover corner, something that they need really badly on their team. That's something they don't have, is someone who can actually go out there and cover. I think that's the biggest issue. And look, Lattimore has been hurt quite a bit. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, you're looking at a guy who's only 28 years old, who's had an opportunity. But the concern I have on this trade is it's been 3 years since Lattimore's played a full season. You got to go back to 2021, but he's played a full year, right? He has been hurt constantly over his eight-year career. He, you know, he's really only played two seasons of full seasons. That's all he's ever done. And so that's a problem. I mean, the guy has only broken up 14 passes over the last 3 years. He's got name appeal, but boy, oh boy, he doesn't really play well. And the Saints are just trying to dump salary. Look, will he be an upgrade for the secondary over the Washington Commanders? And there's no question he's better if he can get on the field. If he can get on the field. It's 3 years he hasn't been on the field, and this is the prime of his career. He's 26, 27. He went to three Pro Bowls. Well, actually, he went to four. But to me, you know, that was then is then, now is now. That's the concern.
When you see New Orleans and what they're trying to do with Mickey Loomis, and now obviously Dennis Allen has been exited stage left, do you think that Mickey's going to be able to try to now do the salary dump, as you mentioned? Is he going to be in charge of this turnover in New Orleans again? Because I think he gets rightfully a lot of credit for what's happened in the past. Do you think Mickey is the right guy still going forward for New Orleans to kind of revamp what they're going to try to do in the future?
Going to be interesting. You know, he brought Randy Mueller back there, who was at one time the general manager. Mickey actually replaced Randy Mueller. That's why we can't have Randy on the show anymore. Randy went back into the NFL. And he also has Dave Ziegler working for there as the Las Vegas Raiders former general manager. So he's got a lot of help. Look, it's going to take a reconstruction. It's going to take some time. You know, they got to decide on Derek Carr. Derek Carr got he got Dennis Allen fired twice, right? I mean, think about it. You know, that was a double dip for Derek Carr. So I think to me that they still have Jeff Ireland. They have a really good personnel department. I fully expect them. Look, they're going to go with Kool-Aid, the one corner who they drafted in the second round last year. They got Taylor, who they drafted in the second round in 22. You know, they've got a lot of young corners that they probably feel like they like, and I'm sure their patience ran really thin on Lattimore. You know, when a guy doesn't play a season for 3 years and you're paying him significant cash, you worry. You're problematic about it.
We saw some other moves, and I don't know how much they move the radar and the needle for you, but one of them were the Steelers getting Mike Williams out of New York. Of course, he came over from the Chargers, and you kind of thought this move might be imminent once the Jets got another receiver there in Devontae Adams. It's going to be a fifth-round pick that the Jets get back there. Is there something left in Mike Williams? Was it just not a good fit in New York with Aaron Rodgers?
He didn't look like he had anything left. I'm shocked they got a fifth-round pick. I mean, we saw Tre'Davious White get traded for basically nothing because it looks like he can't play anymore. And Baltimore took a huge chance on it just to get somebody in there that has experience, that played corner. I kind of thought this would be the Mike Williams deal. I was surprised they gave up a fifth-round pick for him. And then Preston Smith, I think, gives him another edge setter to go along, another rusher. I think when they lost Nate Herbig, one of the reasons they lost to the Cowboys is they didn't have Alonzo Highsmith in that game, right? So they lose him. Herbig was really one of their better players on Pittsburgh. But then he got hurt in the game. He's still hurt, right? And now, all of a sudden, without Alex Highsmith, you know, they couldn't rush the passer. They couldn't make a play. And I think they felt like they needed somebody to give them some, basically what we call they have three for two. So they have three players that can play two positions and feel like they can get something out of that. And I think that's kind of what they did here. So Smith comes over, and he was kind of phased out in Green Bay. They had a lot of good outside rushers, and he wasn't getting on the field. So I think that helps them. I think Herbig is really a good player. right? Nick Herbig's a good player. They drafted him in the fourth round in 23, but he pulled a hamstring in that Dallas game. And I think what Omar Khan wanted to do is make sure he had enough depth there because he's going to need that. Because if Highsmith or Watt get hurt, they're not the same team.
When you see the Steelers now at 2-1, and you mentioned those moves, Tre'Davious White going to the Ravens. They'll find out. It looked like the Rams might even have ended up cutting him. So at least they get a seventh-round pick here, L.A. does, in return for Tre'Davious White. I'm not sure, though, David.
I think that pick's probably conditional.
Okay.
He's probably going to have to stay on the team because I think, to me, they're going to take a look at him. They're taking on the salary. You know, he's a guaranteed contract salary. I think to me, if they're going to play any man-to-man with Tre'Davious White, it's going to be iffy. People are going to go right after him. Mm. One thing about the National Football League, when you have a wounded duck, you don't get a break. They go after that wounded duck. And White, if you can't cover for the Rams, do you think you're going to cover for the Ravens against Cincinnati this week? I don't think so.
So these moves that we're talking about with Preston Smith and Mike Williams to the Steelers, Tre'Davious White to the Ravens, those aren't numbers movers to you, is it, when you start to do the depth? Because the Steelers are 2-1 dogs to win that division.
No, but I think what they are is they're pieces, right? That you've got to come in and fill a role, right? Mike Williams, you come in, give us some vertical presence on the outside, make people have to defend the outside quadrant of the field, and hopefully they'll open up something for someone else. Same thing with Za'Darius White. Gives them an opportunity to have another rusher, mm-hmm. have somebody who can run around the corner. You know, they don't have Hutchinson. He's not going to replace Hutchinson. He's going to be a piece to replace Hutchinson. Same thing with Preston Smith. Preston Smith's looking at, look, going to come in, going to be a rotational player. We got 3-for-2 now. We don't have to wear out Watt the whole game. We don't have to wear out Highsmith the whole game. So that they're going to play roles in that, you know? They're going to play roles in that. And, you know, Mingo's a guy that I think that Jerry, again, likely saw a lot in. His scouts liked him. So this is more of a longer-term play than just the next week's game.
I'll tell you, on a Wednesday morning, Michael, football is what unites us. Great conversation to begin the show to wrap up the trade deadline. Now the teams are what the teams are going to be going forward. Got a lot to get to when we come back. Wrong or right moves? We'll talk about those line moves in the NFL.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Continuing the Wednesday conversation here on the Lombardi Line, Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. Going to have Will Hill join us in the next segment from Connecticut. Adam Burke is going to join us in hour number two. Did want to get back to America's team here, Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, I was underwhelmed, Michael, by what the Cowboys decided to do at the trade deadline. And we'll find out if Jonathan Mingo is going to be worthy of a fourth round pick. That's essentially what they gave up to get him out of Carolina. But then the bigger news to me was obviously that you're not going to have Dak Prescott, it looks like, for at least 4 weeks here if you're a Cowboy backer at 3-5 right now. The chances to make the playoffs, boy, they don't look good. You can get 11-1 odds right now on the Dallas Cowboys to make the playoffs. You had to lay numbers in the summertime here, and now it's been a disaster. When you look at the Cowboys, Michael, with Cooper Rush for the foreseeable future, potentially Trey Lance now is going to move up to the backup role there. What do you want to see? Because you paid Cooper Rush to keep him there as the backup. And as you mentioned in the last segment, you did give up a fourth round pick last year to get Trey Lance out of San Francisco. How does that quarterback room look now with Dak on the shelf for at least 4 weeks?
Well, we know Trey Lance couldn't beat out Cooper Rush. I mean, Mike McCarthy gave Trey Lance every single rep this summer, tried to make him win the job. I mean, I think if he felt like he could be the backup quarterback, they would have just carried two and put someone on practice squad. Mm. But I don't think that Lance could win the job. And I think he feels like Cooper Rush is by far the better player, which I'm sure that's the case in the building because Trey Lance has got name appeal. He's got draft status. He just hasn't performed to the level that we would expect his draft status to indicate. So to me, look, I'm not sure what the Cowboys are doing. I think this has been an ongoing misevaluation of the Cowboys team by the front office. I think they think they're better than they really are, and they're not. I think I said it last year, they overachieved. I think they felt like they underachieved. And I think they're still going down this road. They feel like, okay, Cooper won three games for us last year, but you're nowhere near the same team defensively. You don't have near the depth defensively. You don't have Micah Parsons. You may not have him again this week. We'll find out today, Wednesday, where his status is, but which they should have put him on IR because he's already missed, I think, four games by now. So to me, I think ultimately what's happened here is this is a disconnect between what we think our team is and how our team is playing. Does that mean it's bad news for Mike McCarthy? Yeah, usually when the front office has higher expectations, the coach gets fired. You know, Jacksonville, we saw Sha Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, say this is the best Jaguars team I've been a part of in my career as an owner. Well, they're 2-7. What do you think is going to happen to Dougie?
Right, and I'm looking at it too. A guy like McCarthy, and obviously Doug Peterson, who won a Super Bowl back in his Philadelphia days, McCarthy winning one back in his Green Bay days. Is there something he can do now, short of miraculously turning this thing around with Cooper Rush at the helm, to potentially save that job? Because we hear this stuff right out of Chicago, where players are talking, and we know how this goes in some of these locker rooms. Does Mike still have command of that thing down there, or is this just it's Jerry, and you know Mike's gonna? We're going to find out what the fate of Mike McCarthy is more than likely at the end of the season.
Well, Mike's hands are really tied, and not from Jerry, not from Jerry's presence, from Jerry's actions, right? They can't run the ball. You put Cooper Rush in there like they did last year, and they had a running game last year. They could run the ball. We weren't thinking Tony Pollard was the same Tony Pollard we remember before the knee injury, but he was still a good player. And so they don't have that. They can't run the ball against anybody. Now they're going to get, you know, CeeDee Lamb's going to be doubled, right? They're going to stack the box and say, okay, Cooper, you beat us. You beat us. See what you can do. And that's a hard endeavor. You know, it's hard to run the ball. Look, they have two really good young offensive linemen. Yesterday I did the coach podcast with Belichick, and we put both Beebe and Guyton on the all-Belichick first and second-year player team. Those are really two good players. But Zach Martin's not the same player he once was. Neither Steele isn't playing very well. So they've got some areas. They've got some young players, but I think some of the guys they're counting on to be elite aren't to the same level that we remember them to be.
Boy, I tell you, you look at that schedule, as we just put up there at VSiN.com, in the next 4 weeks, if Dak can't go the next 4 weeks, it takes you all the way through Thanksgiving, which is the Giants. But, boy, that schedule starting this week against Philadelphia, 7-point home dogs there to the Eagles, it's going to be tough sledding if you really think the Cowboys can somehow turn this thing around, because I don't quite see it. Michael, of course, we've got our all-new VSiN Watch app. It's going to make it very easy to watch and listen to VSiN anytime, anywhere. So you can visit the Apple app, the Google Play Store now. Download the VSiN Watch app. You're going to get 24/7 access to our live audio and video stream. Watch the replays of your favorite VSiN shows like The Lombardi Line. Easily stream video to your smart TV. Browse clips by sport. Use the search feature to find the specific VSiN expert insights you're interested in. The VSiN Watch app is free to download for both Apple and Android users. Do not delay. Visit the Apple or Google App Store now to download the all-new VSiN Watch app now and become part of the Sports Betting Network. We mentioned some of those changing lines. The Cowboys line is standing right now at 7. That total is at 42. There's some other ones that I'm curious if you think they're the right or the wrong moves here when you look. And one of those will be that Commanders game against the Steelers. This opened up Commanders 1.5. It is now up to 3. And I feel like it's a real marquee game. We talked about the changes on both these teams here as the trade deadline has now come and gone. Do you think that is the right number now to get all the way to 3? And right now that juice is towards the Steelers side here, minus $1.15, if you're grabbing the 3 with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, Mike Tomlin as an underdog on the road is a really good play. But I think what this game is about is really about they don't feel like they can stop the Commanders from really scoring a lot of points. And we know Pittsburgh isn't going to be the most explosive offense in the league, right? We know even with the change at quarterback, it's about ball control. It's about trying to keep the game in the teens. Maybe we'll get it to the 20s, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, when you look at it, they scored 32 against the Raiders. They scored 37 against the Jets, and they scored 26 against the Giants, you know. So that they've been on a better roll, but before that, they struggled to score a lot of points. So we'll see. This is off the bye week. You know, they've had a lot of time to look at the Washington Commanders. I think there's going to be a lot of sharps coming. I don't think this is going to stay at 3 for very long, David.
Yep.
I think it's going to come back down to 2.5. I think if you want to take the Steelers, you better take them right now.
Excellent advice. Think of the exact same thing, that if you're going to be grabbing the guys with the terrible towels, you probably want to hop on those threes now. You're not going to get to 3.5. I can't see that scenario happening. So I think you're spot on. This is probably going to come down as we get closer to kick on Sunday. The Falcons are one of those teams, Michael, that I want to say, all right, now we know who they are, and Kirk Cousins has got his sea legs back. They're running the football pretty darn well with that two-headed monster there. And now they're up to 3.5, and we can understand why, right? The Saints with Marshawn Lattimore, as we just mentioned, trading him yesterday to the Commanders. But it is up to 3.5. Are they fool's gold, Atlanta, or are they a trustable stock at this juncture?
Well, I mean, they won 26-24 on the last second field goal last time they played them, right? And so I think to me, you know, now there's a lot that's happened to New Orleans since then, mostly because of their offensive line and mostly because they weren't able to get production from the quarterback. I mean, but let's put this in perspective. The last time they played, the Saints dominated the game. Mm. The Saints had the ball for 35-plus minutes. The Falcons only had 14 first downs in the game. Right. The Falcons only converted 4 third downs. I mean, this is a game that if you took the Saints and laid the points or whatever the line was in the game, I'm not quite sure what the line was in the game when we went to it. I think that, you know, I think ultimately, you know, it was a close game. But the
Saints were
really
getting 3, if memory serves, right around that number.
Yeah,
down there,
I think so. But yeah, they should have won the game. Yep. I mean, they were the better team. Except they turned the ball over twice, and then they couldn't keep the Falcons from scoring. They had the pass interference penalties in the game, and the kid made a long, long field goal, which cost them the game. But their defense played really well. This is one of the best defensive games that Dennis Allen had. Again, they had 15 rushes in the game, only 88 yards. They forced Cousins to throw the ball 35 times, put pressure on him. He threw a pick. So to me, this is about a tale of where two teams have been and where they are today. And if you feel like New Orleans can muster up any of that reclamation that they had earlier in the season with Darren Rizzi as their new coach, then I think you got to take the points here. I'm surprised it's moving away, because when you watch that game, and I did, you know, the Saints really, that's one the Saints should have won.
Very quickly, we're seeing one more move towards the dog, and that is the Chiefs. They were 9.5 against the Broncos. I think you and I talked about it earlier in the week. Felt like that was a little bit high. Again, still undefeated. Now it's down to 8 against the Broncos. Is that a play on short week for the Chiefs? Yes, they're still undefeated, but a really good defense in Denver. That got maybe exposed in Baltimore. They probably should bounce back to closer what we've seen Denver be defensively for the majority of the year.
I mean, they played Denver good last year with Russell. They beat Denver with Russell. I mean, excuse me, they beat Kansas City with Russell. Yep. I mean, they played Kansas City tough. I mean, and it's a tough battle. I mean, look, would it shock me if I woke up Monday morning and Denver upset them? No, not at all. Because, I mean, Kansas City's not going to go undefeated. Their margin for error is still fairly significant. They do a wonderful job of covering it up. But, man, you know, I think this is a lot of points, and I think it's gotten too far. It's interesting that it's moving down. I think it's going to keep moving.
Wow. I wonder if we can get down to 7 before kickers. Right now, 9.5 down to 8 already here with that money move. All right, when we come back, let's go to the King of Connecticut. Will Hill joins the program next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We continue the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. And Michael, we always love to go up to the King of Connecticut, the one and only Will Hill. You can follow him on X as I do at not the Will Hill, but it is Will Hill. And he joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Will, how are you today, my friend? Wait, Michael and I were just talking about the trade deadline. Does this move anything for you? Any of those moves that you saw when you look at the futures market here, any teams that you readjust after the trade deadline, are you like, nah, these teams are who I thought they were?
Well, first of all, good to see you guys. Thanks for having me. I'm a little disappointed because in the election, I voted for Aaron Boone, hoping, hey, if enough people vote him for president, then he can't manage the Yankees. So I was hoping we could get him into office.
Did you write him in?
Get him out of the dugout. I wrote him in. I was trying to get him out of the dugout. Anything to get him in, to get him out of the Yankee dugout. Look, I mean, I think that Washington, they clearly had their issues when they defend you know, the best receivers for other teams. So that was a pretty aggressive move. I can't understand what your what do you say? Not your team, not my team, America's team.
Our team, Will. It's our team.
What are we doing? I mean, Jerry might need a little. There needs to be an intervention or something. What that trade was, I have no idea. But yeah, it was exciting. I was hoping that my Vikings would do a little bit more, but they made their move for Cam Robinson a couple weeks ago. I wonder if Darisaw hadn't gotten hurt, if they would have been a little more aggressive going for a Dexter Lawrence or something like that. But you know, it was fun to get a couple of moves here, but nothing that extremely moved the needle. I think Washington obviously was the big one.
You've got a lot of love for the college game. What was your initial reaction to the college poll last night? Were you surprised Ole Miss wasn't in the top 12?
I don't usually get involved. I don't get too like worked up one way or another with these initial college polls because they can do whatever they want. They can move, you know, they can make the rules. They can break the rules. What's the Johnny Sack line? We make the rules and we break the rules. They can do whatever they want. They could say, hey, this team hopped this team without, you know, the other team losing. So these initial ones don't really matter. They can kind of move it however they want. But, you know, this is still going to play out. And look, a lot of these teams in the top 12, there's going to be more losses. So there's going to be shuffling around. And again, they can hop teams basically on air. They can say, hey, this team just has a better schedule. They had a better win, even though, you know, a team in front of them didn't lose. They could still move, you know, team A instead of in front of team B just because they want to.
Let's get to maybe the big game of the weekend. Certainly Georgia against Ole Miss is going to be it's going to have a lot of importance going forward, you would think now that these rankings have been set with those first polls out yesterday. What do you make of that game? You think points are going to be hard to come by?
I like the under. I just think Georgia, this is not their typical offense. They don't have, you know, usually they're just loaded with NFL players at the skill guys. It's not the same team without Bowers, without Ladd McConkey. They haven't really replaced those guys. And Beck, I have a ticket on him for winning the Heisman. That is confetti. He is not winning. He's been awful. He has thrown interception after interception. And they're lucky Florida's quarterback got hurt last week, because if he didn't get hurt, I don't know if they were winning that game against the Gators last week. They were playing really bad football. And I think Kirby Smart will go into this game and say, hey, we're not going to have another repeat of Alabama. I'm not going to turn the ball over and have this quarterback lose the game. I think with how turnover-prone Beck has been, they're going to be conservative with the ball, and they're going to try to win it with their defense like they did against Texas. And then on the other side of the ball, I think there's a perception of Ole Miss that, you know, it's basketball on grass. They're an offensive team, which, look, they had an explosion last week against Arkansas, but in SEC play, they had not scored more than 27 points heading into last week. And they've been really good on defense. I mean, they got multiple guys that are going to the NFL in that front seven. So to me, I don't know, like a 27-24, 24-21 type of game. I actually think it's going to be more of a defensive game than you might think. I wouldn't be surprised if Ole Miss beats them. I can't quite get there with Lane Kiffin against Kirby Smart. I just can't. I just never trust Lane Kiffin in these big games. His teams never seem to rise to the occasion. But boy, this is not the same version of Georgia. I do think we're looking at an under game here, though.
You know, Michigan and Indiana, Michigan's 2 touchdown dog. I mean, who in my lifetime, I don't know if I would have ever said that, but it's true this year. And you're going to double down on this Indiana team, which to me, you know, gets behind 10-0 last week and then just storms back. I mean, really, Kirk Cignetti's done a remarkable job taking a lot of guys from the MAC conference onto his team. I think to me, it's an impressive story, but you're going to take the Indiana and the Hoosiers and the points and lay the points.
I think I saw the stat. This is the first time maybe ever that Michigan back-to-back weeks is a 14-plus point underdog. And like you said, man, imagine being in a coma, you know, 8 months ago and you wake up and you see Indiana's a 2-touchdown favorite over Michigan. Like, what the hell is going on in the world? I like Indiana, though. I mean, every week, and I've been guilty of it. I thought against the Nebraska game, hey, maybe this is a spot for a letdown. I know a lot of sharp people last week were on Michigan State, but maybe that's a spot for a letdown. They don't have any letdowns. They're very well coached. They're really good on both sides of the ball. And if you look at their schedule, they have a bye next week. They have a game against Ohio State, and they have a game against Purdue. They're going to beat Purdue. As long as they win this game, they're in the playoff. This is a play-in game to me, because even a one loss to Ohio State, I mean, they're going to have to put them in the tournament here, in the playoff. And I just think Michigan, they've got some issues in the secondary. We know their issues with their passing game. Indiana is really just loaded on both sides of the ball. And Indiana is just, man, I know they haven't played the toughest schedule, but they just steamroll everybody. And that building, this is the biggest program, the biggest game in program history. I think they win. And I think they win by margin. So it looks funny to lay 14 with Indiana, but I think they absolutely roll Michigan here. And you know, I said it early in the year. I'll say it again. I don't think they'll make any – they're not going to do anything this year, but, man, that Michigan coach, whew, I don't know that he's long for that job with these kind of seasons.
Wow, I just cannot believe that we're talking about undefeated Indiana, 8-1 ATS, by the way, in those nine games. Absolutely remarkable, and Will's going to lay those 14. Yeah, this is a brave new world that we truly live in. I think BYU is who we thought Utah was going to be this year, and now Utah is getting four against the Cougs. What do you make of that rivalry game here this weekend?
I'm going to take the four with Utah. I think that, look, Utah's had a horrible year. Nothing's gone well for them. But in these rivalry games, you can sometimes erase a bad season with one good night and at least salvage something out of the season. And it's a low total, 40.5. So getting four is valuable. They still play pretty good defense. They're still well coached. They still have a really good home field advantage. And that these home field advantages is magnified when you have these rivalry games. So BYU has been very fortunate with turnovers. They've had an incredible season. I mean, this is another team out of nowhere. I think their win total is 4.5, 5. And we're sitting here talking about them going to the playoff. But I think Utah's right in this game. I could see like a 20-17 game either way. Wouldn't be shocked if Utah won, but I will take the points in what should be a close, low scoring game here.
You know, you're on the Deion Sanders train. You think Colorado's going to win the Big 12?
I can't believe I'm saying it's funny. Last year they stunk and they got like attention every week all the time that you could never hear about anything but Colorado. This year they got a chance to win the Big 12 and go to the playoff, and they don't get talked about nearly as much. It's very strange. I was wrong about this team. They hit the portal well. They're much better defensively. They're much better up front. Plus 350 to win the Big 12. If you think they can win this week, instead of laying the 3.5 against Texas Tech, I think they got a really good chance to at least be in the Big 12 title game. If you look at the rest of their schedule, Kansas, Oklahoma State, they've got some really winnable games. Now, I usually know all of these tiebreakers because the tiebreakers in these conferences are pretty straightforward. It's head-to-head or it's something simple. Now with these mega conferences that don't play each other, where all the teams don't play each other, it comes down to like composite schedule. It's very convoluted, but they had a great week last week because Kansas State lost. Iowa State lost. They had a bye and they hopped all these teams. So if they went out, I think they're going to be in the Big 12 title game. I do think they win this week. I think Texas Tech just doesn't have enough defensively, to get enough stops, especially with that secondary. I think Colorado and Deion are going to be in the Big 12 title game, as crazy as it sounds.
You know, Will, we've talked about it a lot this year in college football, and certainly now Travis Hunter's plus 220 to win the Heisman Trophy. We're still on the same tune that we don't think you can win the Heisman Trophy if your team at least doesn't get to the college football playoff?
I just think with the undefeated quarterbacks, if Cam Ward goes undefeated, if Gabriel goes undefeated, if Hunter loses like another game or two and they don't make the playoffs, I don't think he's going to win. I don't know that it's fair. But, hey, if they run the table, if they win the Big 12, could he have a shot? I don't know. I mean, the market seems to think it's Ward. These voters tend to just lean towards the quarterbacks. I don't know. If you had to pick right now, like who wins the Heisman, I'm curious, what do you guys think? Because I think Hunter has a shot. I just don't think he'll ultimately win.
I think he's the best player, Michael. Like that's the guy I look at next level. But I'm with Will. If they don't make it to the college football playoff, he probably won't win. I don't know. It's not supposed to be correlated that way, but that's the way I see it. I feel like it's got to be a team that's in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, the fact that Miami got the bye and they're one of the four teams with the bye, I think Cam Ward puts him in position to say, Miami's undefeated, they're a good team, and you're the best player on their team, and you're the reason why they can overcome Mario Cristobal. You got to give him that one. Will, Arizona this week host your New York football Jets. You're going to take the Cards again?
Cardinals are underrated. I talked about this last week. If you look at their schedule, I mean, this was a team that are only 5-4, but look who they've played. They've played the Bills, the 49ers, the Lions, the Packers, Commanders, Chargers. They have not played really any soft games. Even last week against the Bears, Bears were over 500. I think they're underrated based on their schedule, and I like them this week. And Gannon is still 20-1 to win Coach of the Year. If they ever win the division, that 20-1 is way too long for Coach of the Year.
Just let it be known, everybody in America, that Will Hill wrote in Aaron Boone yesterday, trying to get him off the Yanks. It didn't work, Will.
See you guys. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff from Will joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. When we come back, Michael, I want to talk about something you wrote for VSiN.com yesterday. Look to some midseason awards as well. That is next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi with you. A lot of fun having Will Hill on in the last segment. We were kind of talking a little bit about navigating that Heisman Trophy market, right, in college football. Michael, I know right now on VSiN.com, you wrote about the NFL MVP and how you kind of navigate potentially that race. Where do you start? Because, again, it's one of those odd things of, like, it's not supposed to be a team-associated award, but you know how this works with the voters, right? You do have to kind of take in some team success for the individual award, right?
Well, I mean, look, Jaden Daniels, if you removed him from the Washington Commanders, what would their record be?
Right.
Right? I mean, but he's a rookie, so is he going to get votes? I mean, you could make a strong argument that Jaden Daniels is the MVP of the league of what he's been able to do, and his odds are 12-1. I mean, to me, this we call it the MVP, but it's a quarterback award. I mean, the true MVP of the league is the Detroit Lions offensive line. Mm. But we're not going to give it to them because it's an individual award. They're the best thing that's going on. They're the reason Detroit's so effective. They're the reason Detroit can beat people at home and away. They're the reason Detroit controls the game. They're the reason Detroit's able to have Jared Goff at quarterback and have him look like a super. They're the reason for everything. This offensive line that's so dominating. But that's just a fallacy. I mean, we saw this before in the league. I can remember back in 2008 when the Giants won their suit with that offensive line with Sean O'Hare playing center. I mean, that the reality, that the reason the Giants were winning was their offensive line. That's why they won. I don't know why teams can't figure that out. I don't know why it's so hard to comprehend that. The Bengals, I know they got a great player in Ja'Marr Chase, but they would have had a generational talent and left tackle with Penei Sewell, but they went wide receiver instead. Mm. And it just fell into – think about the fortunate behavior of Detroit. And take nothing away from Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell. But they're sitting there on draft day. They have the number two pick overall in the draft, and Aiden Hutchinson just falls in their lap.
Right.
And then think about Penei Sewell just falls in their lap. They get two front seven players, offensive line, defensive linemen, just fall in their lap. I mean, just because somebody else was being stupid. And I don't think it's fair to say Cincy's stupid with Ja'Marr Chase, but you can't control the game without a great line. And Cincy's offensive line is garbage. They're not good. They're just not good enough. I know they paid a lot of money for Orlando Brown, but that struggles. The right tackle they drafted in the first round, they've been chasing that ever since.
Yeah.
But getting back to the MVP, David, I think to me, you know, everybody, it's a quarterback award, but I think it's the quarterback who really has the number one seed, who does the things that makes it, that makes their team in position to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you're seeing right now Lamar, who is the reigning defending MVP, is plus 280 to win that award. What is kind of interesting there when you go down the board a little bit, the first non-quarterback, as you mentioned, it's a quarterback-driven award, is Derrick Henry, Lamar's teammate there in Charm City at 20-1. Could they realistically make a case for Henry over Lamar? Or do you say, no, it all starts with the great eight there in Baltimore?
I mean, I think he's been sensational, right? I mean, he's been great. And he's been everything they hoped he would become, and he's made their team get that identity that they lacked last year when they decided not to run the ball against Kansas City in the conference championship game. I think to me, that certainly signals MVP quality, but Lamar's ahead of him. When you break Lamar down, and I did in my column, he's better at every single category this year than he was last year,
yes.
And he won the MVP last year. I mean, it's staggering how good he was, how good he is. His accuracy, his ability to handle the pressure, you know, he's hard to tackle, always was, but now he's brought to life a receiving core that's really good. I mean, to me, he's leading the team, and he's overcoming a defense that isn't what he's used to having, right? I mean, typically this defense has always set the tone for who the Ravens are as a football team, and that's not the case this year. They're giving up 93 points in the fourth quarter. They really can't shut down a good passing game. We'll see it. You know, I would think the over on this game tomorrow night's going to keep getting bet because I think both teams can move the football.
You can only get access to Michael's column like this at VSiN.com and everything we do here at VSiN if You are a VSiN Pro subscriber. So again, you can do this for an introductory rate of just $9.99. You're going to get daily best bets, 19 hours of live programming, power strength, betting, better ratings used by professional handicappers, our exclusive betting splits. It's all there for you. So again, no better time than the present than to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. You sign up at VSiN.com/subscribe, VSIN.com/subscribe. Let's give out some midseason awards, Michael, that you like. We'll start with the MVP race right now and the number associated with it. I know you're looking at Detroit there. Why do you think Jared Goff at 7-1 would get your midseason award?
I mean, I don't know how he can play any better. I really don't. I mean, you know, they've got to, again, credit this offensive line. But I think sometimes we really get caught up in, well, they've got a good team around them, so we devalue the player. I think what Goff has done is handle pressure, handle weather. It's two things I didn't think he was very good at the Rams, nor was he good at when he first came to the Lions. But he's done a much better job of that. I think I was torn between Lamar and Jared Goff. I went with Lamar as offensive player of the year. It's 20-1. It probably won't happen because they'll give it to a receiver. But to me, I think those are the two best offensive weapons in football. You cannot ignore Goff, what he's been able to do. This completion percentage is way higher than it ever was in his career. The Lions are winning. They won in Detroit. They won in Minnesota. They won in Green Bay handily. They won handily. So to me, I think that was why I went that way. And then to me, I didn't want to exclude Lamar because I think it's a toss-up between who the MVP is. Is it Lamar or Goff? I just thought Goff's odds were better, Dave.
Yeah, and I think that should be a lesson for everybody in the futures market. To Michael's point here, you know, sometimes they want to award both guys. So, like, take your pick. Is it MVP? Is it Offensive Player of the Year? So hard to distinguish between those two. So I see what you did there. It's interesting for your Defensive Player of the Year so far and your Coach of the Year, both in the Steel City. And maybe T.J. Watt's helping Mike get that Coach of the Year because you think of Pittsburgh, and Michael, I'm right there with you. I think defense first.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the way Tomlin has been able to coach this team, you know, it's not sexy, it's not flashy. They're getting better every single week, you know, and he's rescued Russell Wilson, where Russell looks better here with Tomlin than he did with Sean Payton in Denver. It's fair to say that. He just wasn't a fit for what Sean wanted to do offensively. So, look, I don't think Mike gets enough credit at all. I don't think it gets enough credit at all for how great of a coach, how great of a leader he is. You know, no one on our network ever thought that, you know, everybody wanted to take the Steelers under win total. I didn't want to take it over. I certainly wasn't going to take it under. I wasn't going to take it. I wasn't going against them, but there were a lot of people that felt like he shouldn't. Now, look, Dan Quinn and Kevin O'Connell have done great jobs. But Mike Tomlin was counted out. Now, Dan Quinn was counted out, too, so certainly that's why he's the favorite. But there's some really good coaches on that column there that have done a really good job.
Yeah, I'm with you. I did take the Steelers at 11-1 to win this division, and I'm still hanging in there. And it was a bet on Tomlin. It really was, and that defense. And I love the fact that that's why you've got Defensive Player of the Year right now being Watt, and the Coach of the Year being Mike Tomlin. That was kind of the recipe that I saw possibly coming through here. When I see Jared Verse down there for Defensive Rookie of the Year, talented kid out of Florida State, Michael, I get text messages all the time from Brian McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champ, and Steeler this, Steeler that, Florida State this, Florida State that, and then Tyler Fulgham, big Rams guy. How good is Jared Verse? Because I got to be honest with you, I haven't paid that much attention, but in my text, they love this kid.
Well, I think what the Rams haven't gotten enough credit for is how good they have rebuilt their defensive front. I mean, they've got some really, really good young players, starting with, you know, Fisk, Brendan Fisk, who they drafted in the second round, Verse, who went to Albany State, transferred to Florida State, Byron Young, Kobe Turner. Both players played really well for them. I mean, they've done a really good job of packing this front seven, giving themselves a chance. It's really been impressive, and Verse is one of the best rushers. I mean, Latua, it certainly could have been on this list too. I think he's played really well. I just think Verse has been a little bit more consistent. If Fisk is 10-1, I mean, I think Fisk is a lock. We just did the Belichick first and second year players, and we had three Rams on this list.
Wow.
In the defensive front.
And again, you think
that's how good they are.
Yeah, you think McVay, and you think offense, right? And not having draft picks forever. to be able to get back into the draft this year after the Stafford trade, it feels like a win-win, right? You win the Super Bowl by getting Stafford, and yet you wait your time, and then you get guys like Fisk and Verse. They're not missing on the defensive side of the ball.
No, and they're using second and third round picks on them, right? Verse was a first, right?
Yep.
But Fisk is a two. Kobe Turner's a three. Byron Young's a three. I mean, they're really doing a nice job there. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you're forced to just have to find it in the draft as opposed to pay for it. And I think, to me, they've done a really good job with that.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that 1 year, not even a year removed from Aaron Donald, you do have some replacements right there. The future looking bright on that defensive side of the ball for the Rams. Great stuff, Michael, with the article. Again, VSiN.com, everybody. Be a VSiN Pro subscriber. You get access to Michael's articles each and every week. Come on back, hour number two next of the Lombardi Line.